SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday.
OBS, two-year-old in training sale, attendees. Whether you're on the grounds or whether you're attending it virtually. And plenty of attendance virtually. We're going to go down to OBS at some point here in the next couple of hours. And we actually will also connect with one of the virtual attendees at OBS, Aaron Wellman. Going to visit top of hour two. I thought maybe Aaron was out there, but as he'll tell you, he had to stay home because he's got his second vaccine shot coming up. So he's attending and has got some representation, some people we know, right, that are perusing the two-year-olds. There's a lot of enthusiasm, it seems. A completely different backdrop, obviously, than last year, where, I mean, the uncertainty was, you know, was just descending on everything. Certainly not just the industry and the sales organizations and consigners and everybody else and breeders. It obviously permeated every walk of life. But OBS powered through the first round, and that ended up being important. And we'll talk to Tom Ventura. I'm going to guess around 10:30. The first gavel drops a little after 11, and there's a lot of positive reports. If you haven't looked through some of the very fast. I mean, you had a big bunch of, it wasn't like there were two or three or five that, you know, zipped and then it cascaded from there. There was a big group of horses that went 9-4 and 10 flat. So they were moving right along. We'll see what everybody thinks. And we'll get a little bit of a pulse take. Tomorrow when Sid's in, we'll have day one results, and it's always fun this time of year. I my inclination is to ask, like I asked Kenny McPeak about, you know, the babies that he's impressed with. Kind of funny, too, that Baffert, if you were listening to the replay just now, those questions, I don't send them out ahead of time. and for both McPeak and Baffert to cite Unified, you know, who stands at Lane's End, right? Yeah. And I think 10,000, both of them, including Unified, with some of the more, you know, high profile buzz first crop stallions. Pretty interesting. There's before outs, there were seven Unified. It looks like today, looks like maybe three today and four tomorrow. So there's one to watch, right? The best part of the two-year-old sale season is you may get, you know, some insight for when the two-year-olds hit the racetrack. I mean, that's the best part of, you know, the best part of waking up is two-year-olds on your betting menu, and Folgers in your cup. Actually, I take that back. It looks like all but one. I thought there was 175 selling today. 280 selling today. So all but one of the Unifieds will go through on Tuesday. one, two, three, four, six today, one tomorrow. All right. So there's the watch list. We'll see what else. And we'll see what Aaron, I don't know if they want to give away, if he wants to give away, anybody off their short list, the two-year-old racing season, technically it starts today. And then of course, at the end of the month, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Right? Yeah. If Florida Derby Day is the 27th. So yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow at Gulfstream for the Phasic sale, which is a boutique, more of a boutique-y sale, then back to OBS for April, then to Monium, and then back to OBS for June. So, there's the major exit ramps on the on the two-year-old sale front. We also this morning, in about 10 minutes, the story that, of course, I assume most people got wind of yesterday mid-afternoon, was the HBPA and 11 affiliates filing a lawsuit to challenge the establishment of HISA. And we're going to talk to Brian Kelsey, the lead attorney, the senior attorney at the Liberty Justice Center, who's handling the case. Bill Walmsley, too, from the Arkansas HPPA, will join us. And there's quite a bit to unpack here, and we've got probably a handful of attorneys that we can trot through as part of this discussion. But we'll start the first stop on this train will be with HBPA and their representation. Yeah, the lawsuit is essentially going to challenge the authority that is being created, is essentially with the bill passed, as part of the omnibus bill, technically it is established. So the concept that this potentially violates, a lot of the same, frankly, it's got to be a lot of the same, potentially, a lot of the same issues that came up during the PASPA discussion with sports gambling and sports wagering. And, of course, Dennis Drazen's insight to this would be valuable. One thing that's notable, the fact that the THA, Alan Foreman and his affiliates, are not involved, and they seemingly have established their support for HISA. And yeah, I thought it was notable that they chose not to participate. And the other question I'm going to have to ask too of Kelsey, the states themselves, you would think, states that operate racing commissions, I thought that perhaps states themselves would be part of any potential litigation to try to block this. So we'll talk to Brian Kelsey. We'll see what the core issue to their way of thinking. Just the fact that they're involved, the Liberty Justice Center, they're a nonpartisan, public benefit law firm. And basically the constitutional rights and those, those kinds of issues. Government overreach, for instance, as an umbrella to this. So we'll hear what Brian Kelsey has to say, what he thinks the potential for success is, what the process is for them to be heard. The lawsuit itself was filed in district court in the Northern District of Texas. And Matt Hegarty wrote yesterday in the forum, alleges the creation of the Oversight Board violates the non-delegation doctrine of the U.S. Constitution by granting power to a private company that can only be delegated to a government entity. So there's the core issue, and I am curious, the precedent that's out there to oppose this concept, and what the precedent is to establish an authority like this, because there has to be other self-regulating entities that are operating under similar principles, I'd imagine, and certainly the Jockey Club, when they came forward with this, with HISA, I mean, they had said that they, established the legality of the concept, and that they had vetted it extensively. So, the supporters of the HISA concept, they feel that what they established and what they put forward meets the legal definitions that are necessary. So we'll find out. We'll see. I mean, the thing that I think everybody does agree on, whether you support this concept or not, I think there were two things that were problematic. The fact that no discussion ever took place, that this was done to draw from an Albany, a famous New York maxim, three men in a smoke-filled room. for those of you familiar with how New York operated for 100 plus years, there had been discussion promised as part of the process, but then when the opportunity to sneak it under the door, the way the night auditor does at a hotel, you're laying there in bed and you hear that receipt for the hotel slid under your door. That's what this was, and there was never any of the discussion that was alleged or promised. It was this is what we're doing, and we have a chance to tack it on to the omnibus bill, so you're going to have to like it. Well, not necessarily. The issue that is even more than the clandestine way in which this was implemented, the bigger issue is that there's no discussion of the funding. And as I've laid out for years, when the concept was being executed or proposed, there was always terminology in it that said that handle, that takeout, could not be used to fund it. Well, in this last incantation, that had disappeared. So if this thing gets implemented, as written, there is nothing that prevents all the lip service that's been paid toward horse players. Oh, it can't be funded by tank. I wait and see. But the fact that this wasn't addressed is really a shortcoming and a really dubious part of the potential implementation. So to use what I've described as the Seth Merrow method of deciding on steward calls, you know, Seth says that's a 60-40, that's a 70-30. I really think, I mean, there's people obviously that are 100% behind it and that the game is just so, you know, just overwhelmed with cheating. And so this has to happen because it's an imperative. Obviously there's some people that have that position. But I think larger percentage of stakeholders and you know players are more in the 60-40 range, either for or against. They understand the potential benefits, but they're aware of the potential unintended consequences. And the fact that those consequences weren't discussed up front is what is really troubling and makes you know, this lawsuit, you know, a valuable exercise, at least to my way of thinking. So we'll talk in just a couple of minutes. Brian Kelsey and Bill Walmsley from Arkansas. And we'll let them, I'm just reacting. Let's hear from legal, you know, those with legal expertise. Particularly from Brian, and of course on the racing front, we've got I think more interest and excitement moving toward the weekend and particularly to New Orleans and lots of discussion there to look forward to, and Cheltenham, which is minutes away, first race. I put up Kevin's plays. I retweeted them, and they're also up. I put them at Derby Trail too, and actually, I should put them up on. I haven't put them up on our website. Let me do that too, first chance I get. But they're about 5 minutes away from kicking off Cheltenham, and if you've got the wagering pad in front of you and you're ready to go, the Supreme Novice getting started, and let me pull up a screen too and have it at the ready myself so that I can keep track. We will probably catch the 10, I'm going to guess the Mayor's Hurdle. I want to pick a good one or two. And there's probably two windows today to listen in. The Mayor's Hurdle at 11:40 is a possibility, and also the Ultima, the handicap chase as well. And those are both good because they're super competitive. So they're actually just 2 minutes to post here, and appreciate it. We knew was going to be a short price. Well, 2 to 5, a little hyper aggressive on the short price, actually. Let's just see what. Let me make sure what Kevin before I want to say Grumpy Charlie was the yeah Grumpy Charlie and Irascible. There's an exacta. Grumpy Charlie is 28-1. And Irascible 41-1. Those were the options that Kev thought could be a part of each way bets or the exotics with appreciated. So just about a minute to post, and we'll keep tabs the next 4 days on the hurdling and the chasing at Cheltenham. So and I'll pull up the video too, so we can. hadn't actually looked this morning to see if it what kind of a day it ended. Looks pretty glorious actually at Cheltenham, and they're at the post. All right. So, Case, let's reach for Brian and for Bill. And I should mention too, I'm establishing their visit that the Brian is the legal expertise, but Bill Walmsley's a retired judge as well, so he's just as just as accomplished when it comes to the legal parts of what's going on. So we'll reach for them, and I'm sure that we'll have a steady. I reached out to Alan Foreman and Dennis Drazen. And I think it's pretty clear that their absence of participation, that they, they're accepting of the direction that he's has established. And also, I should probably get a chance to talk to Alex Waldrop too. That's why I laughed when I said how many attorneys, how many attorneys are at our disposal when it comes to, there's too many attorneys that too often, right, that we have to to get to. So, I don't want to launch into anything with and they're off at Cheltenham as well. So we're everything getting going at once. We'll start, I mentioned that Bill Walmsley is going to join us from Arkansas as well, from the HBPA. But first on the line, Brian Kelsey, who's the senior attorney at the Liberty Justice Center. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Brian, I in advance of Judge Walmsley joining us, I thought it'd be important just to establish the parameters involved here, and first explain Liberty Justice and what your involvement essentially means in this in this case.
Sure. Liberty Justice Center is a nonprofit, nonpartisan law firm, and we represent clients throughout the country for free to represent their constitutional rights and promote issues of freedom. And that's why we got involved in this case. We think that this is something that's bigger than, it's larger than horse racing. Really, all Americans should be concerned when Congress gives the power to regulate an entire industry over to a private group of industry insiders. And that's why we're involved in the case. We all, 1 year ago, the United States Supreme Court case of Janus versus AFSCME, in which we freed up many workers from forced dues as well. So that's our interest.
And I was that's a perfect segue, because I was going to ask you to establish what kinds of cases and how and what this fits into in terms of precedent.
Well, we've been involved for over a year in lawsuits regarding the non-delegation doctrine, and that's the technical legal term for what's involved in here. And that just very simply, it just means that Congress has the power to regulate and make laws, and they can't give that power over to private entities, and that's what's happened here. This, as I said, goes beyond horse racing. This is not like the NBA or the NFL. Here, Congress gave, in essence, what is the NBA or the NFL? They gave this newly created authority the power to actually make laws, the power to issue subpoenas, the power to tax owners and trainers and breeders, and they did so with little to no oversight.
I think Judge Walmsley's on with us as well. Bill, good morning.
I am. Hey. Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. I got started with Brian to kind of get the some of the groundwork laid. Brian, before I ask Bill about HBPA's overlying concern, I am curious. There's other industries certainly that self-regulate or have you know, have legal authority. What are the different constructs that are legally permissible in this arena?
Well, the biggest difference in this particular case is that the FTC, in this case, the Federal Trade Commission, they don't have the authority to write the rules that govern horse racing. Only this newly created private entity has the authority. It's only been around for a few months now, and we don't know what rules they're going to create. This was snuck into the December COVID relief bill with little to no discussion, and we think that because of that, it didn't get teased out, and it's illegal, and that would have been caught.
Go ahead, Bill.
From
I was going to say.
And the trainer's point of view, we have absolutely no guidance regarding the positions that this private entity, the authority, will take, what it's going to cost, who's going to pay for it, and how much will we have to pay, because we have no say-so on that, and what punishments may be imposed upon us. That strictly belongs to a private entity, and we have no idea what it is. Contrasting that with what has been decades of regulation of this, of the owners and trainers in the thoroughbred industry by the states and by their racing commission. We know what to expect there, and that's coming from a governmental body where those people who have authority over us have taken oaths to uphold the United States Constitution and their state constitution. Here, these are all private people who have no sworn obligation as public officials have.
On that, it's funny that you referenced that too, Bill, because one of the things that I immediately, when I read the first press releases that came yesterday afternoon, and then in reading Matt Hegarty's piece in Daily Racing Form, one absence from this that I kind of had thought would be part of any legal action were the states themselves, and from that standpoint, Brian or Bill, why are no states themselves taking issue with this?
I'm not sure that it will, that there will not be some states that take issue with it. I think you're talking about a law that passed in December 2020, a couple of 3 months ago. I'm not at all sure that as the attorney generals of the various states take a look at this, that they may not. But I don't have any control over that. All I can do as a president of the Arkansas HBPA and a former national president, all I can do is say we want to challenge the legality of this act, which is one of the things that's great about our democracy is when we think Congress has acted beyond or outside the scope of their authority, we have the right to go to court and test it. I believe it's illegal. I'm hoping that the courts will agree with me, but that's the course we're following.
Mm. Brian, from your perspective, legally, and certainly the horse racing industry, in the person of Dennis Drazen, toppled one of the most challenged and imposing positions in PASPA when it came to establishing the potential for sports betting, and it not having Dennis Drazen involved in this to me is a little bit of a concern, just because he knows these legalities well. And from your experience, what's the prospect for success here, and what is the avenue to be heard? What are the the next steps? How will this unfold?
Well, we think that we have a great chance of winning this lawsuit, and in fact, we're prepared to appeal it, if not all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, as I said earlier, where we have success in winning lawsuits, and so we actually think that this is one of the most brazen giveaways of what should be governmental power to a private entity that we've seen in the last 90 years. And I think that when judges start to take a look at this, that they're going to be furious that Congress abdicated its power in such a way. And so we feel very confident about our path forward. We have filed a motion for preliminary injunction, and we're hopeful that that the court in the Northern District of Texas will take up this issue very quickly and try to resolve it sooner rather than later.
What were the options in terms of filing, and was there a reason specifically for taking it up and taking it to the district court in the Northern District?
Well, one of the defendants, Dr. Black, is located there, and so that's why we filed there.
Interesting. Okay. And would that have, I mean, is what are the, this actually is probably just valuable for people that hear about these kinds of lawsuits, you know, in the news in general. When it comes to, you know, starting the ball rolling, what were the options? Can you go to any district court?
Well, without
you can't go to any.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Judge Walmsley.
You have to go to a court and jurisdiction where one of the defendants resides. So you can't just go and forum shop or anywhere in the United States. You've got to go to a jurisdiction where what gives you jurisdiction is the fact that one of the defendants resides there.
Got it. And you know, the organizations, the affiliates of HBPA that are involved in this, it's a good opening to mention: Arizona, Arkansas, Indiana, Illinois, Louisiana, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Washington. Also, one of the HBPA affiliates that represents the Horsemen at Mountaineer in West Virginia. Judge, I mentioned Alan Foreman earlier and THA. Was there a wider appeal for the other horsemen representations to join this? And who else was recruited to take part?
As far as I know, and that part of that would be a decision made by the national HPPA president, Eric Hamelback, but as far as I know, the way I became involved is a national contacted me and said, would you and your board like to see a challenge of the constitutionality or the legality of the HISA legislation, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act? And I said, absolutely we would. We fought it since 2015. We know its origin comes from an elite group within the thoroughbred industry, which has a conflict to begin with. And yes, we would very much. We also know that that legislation itself was never debated in the House of Representatives or United States Senate. It was attached to the COVID Relief Act as part of it. And a lot of people who in Congress who really didn't like that legislation had no choice but to vote for it because they buried it in that. It's never been debated and discussed, and it needs to be. And at least this way, a forum in court, we won, get to discuss the merits of the legislation, and two, we'll get to challenge whether or not they have unconstitutionally delegated authority that belongs solely to Congress. So this is something the National HBPA and the HBPA affiliates in the United States have fought this particular legislation since 2015. So our stepping forward to challenge it, its legality in court, is a natural progression of the position we've taken for the last 6 years.
Brian, from the legal standpoint, and why has the Jockey Club essentially they feel that they have vetted this? I mean, what is their position, and why is it even challengeable?
Well, that's a good question, and we'll see once they answer the lawsuit. But at this point, as I say, we think that this is one of the most egregious failures to actually legislate in the last 90 years. I mean, Congress is given the authority to make laws, but they can't just give it away, and they certainly can't give it away to private organizations. And that's exactly what they've done here. I mean, this group can issue subpoenas. They can stop someone from racing in the United States, and that's just wrong. That's for government to make those decisions. As Judge Walmsley mentioned, I mean, state racing commissions have existed for over 125 years in America, and they've been governing these things. But those are government bodies that are appointed by elected officials who are accountable to the people that come election day. But in this instance, you've got this entity that was just created a few months ago. Nobody even knows who it is or what it is or what it plans on doing. And you can't give that type of private entity the ability to make actual laws. Congress has to do that.
Is there, and I'll let you both answer this, I suppose there's two different parallel tracks. Is there potential for agreement? And the Judge Walmsley, let me start with you, and I'll go back to Brian. One of the problems here has been that anytime horsemen have asked to fully discuss and debate and negotiate this topic, they're immediately painted as obstructionist and status quo and all the other, you know, cute bon mots that you know, that the jockey club throws at it. Is there room to have a agreement as that would satisfy everybody here, essentially? And if this is successfully challenged, can there be some kind of an authority created with horsemen's support?
I think from the HPPA, and the HPPA are owners and trainers, and most of them are smaller owners and trainers. And you have to understand, the jockey club, it doesn't have any trainers. Its members are all owners, and their special invitation, and they're all larger owners, much larger owners than most of the people in HPPA. I used to say when I was national president, I represent the folks who put on the show, the guys who put the seven races a day. The jockey club represents those who run the stakes races, the one or two races a day. And so you have that natural dichotomy that's there. And I served initially on the first 4 years of the NTRA board as one of the five owner members of that board. After my term as national president was over, I was told that my successor, who happened to be a trainer as a national president of HPPA, they would not recognize him as a member of the board. So I continued serving for an additional year. And so there is that type of conflict that exists that makes it more difficult to negotiate. But I think from the HPPA point of view, if this legislation is stricken, I believe we certainly would have an open mind about talking with anybody about trying to find something that is fair. Thus far, what we've seen from the the jockey club point of view and the proponents of this legislation has not been remotely related to what's fair.
Brian, and similarly, what is the potential for something, and what is an example of something that has worked in this arena, to your knowledge?
Well, any sort of questions of settlement would be up to our clients, including Judge Walmsley. But at the end of the day, as he mentions, I mean, this is a lawsuit about a law that is on the books now. And so we're asking the court to enjoin this law and to stop it from going into effect. And until that happens, there really are no discussions that can take place because this law has got to be taken off the books.
In terms of researching this and trying to figure out, you know, the angles to approach, are there examples that, you know, that have worked that can be pointed to as, you know, as a similar, you know, construction, essentially, you know, a regulating construction in any other private enterprise that, you know, that is out there as an example that has been successfully implemented?
If you use medication as an example, over the last 10 years, the Organization of Racing Commissioners, what they call the RCI,
sure,
which is an Organization of Racing Commissioners International, they have developed more uniformity in medication, set more thresholds, set more limits, properly classified drugs. More has taken place in the last 10 years than all the rest of the history of racing. So we've been moving in that direction. In order for us to fully move in that direction, it can't be a unilateral position on part of the jockey club. It can't be just a position of the HBPA and the jockey club. We've got the THA, another horseman's organization to consider, the TOC in California to consider, the RCI to consider, and the equine veterinarians to consider. They're all players in this, and all of them, except the jockey club, have been excluded in the drafting of this particular legislation. You know, one of the things that would occur to me, I would not want the HBPA to be in charge of regulating the thoroughbred industry. I would not want TOC or THA. But what we have here is we have the jockey club in charge of selecting the authority that will regulate all aspects of this industry. They're self-interested parties. They race just like I do. And so I would want, at the very least, if it is constitutional to have a private entity to regulate an industry, I would want them to be created independently of the interested parties.
Well, and boy, that the way you just framed that, Bill, is it makes it very clear. I mean, Brian, can this essentially be whittled down, distilled to exactly that issue? How can one group within a larger entity be granted authority over everybody?
Well, that'd be exactly
the golden rule. Maybe it's the golden rule in operation. He who has the goal makes the rule.
Brian, this is the central legal doctrine at issue.
And thankfully, our United States courts do not recognize he who has more gold than the other. And they are impartial. They don't care. They're going to follow. I trust that our judges are going to follow the Constitution. And if they agree with us that this law is illegal, they're going to strike it down. And I think that's exactly what should happen. So just to go back to clarify again about the what Judge Walmsley was talking about, I think you have two options if you're looking for a solution for the industry ultimately. As I said, back with my NFL analogy, the NFL is a private organization and people choose to participate in it. So that's one option. But it's not sanctioned by Congress. There are no laws that give it the authority to make rules over your son's little league football. They can't issue subpoenas. They can't stop people from playing football. It's a private organization. And so that's one option that Judge Walmsley has mentioned. On the other hand, had the Federal Trade Commission been given a much, much, much larger role in this process, and if they were the ones who were making the rules, and they're a governmental body appointed by other governmental entities, then that wouldn't solve all the problems. That would actually raise a whole host of other issues, but that would at least solve one of the major problems here, which is that it's a private entity in this instance that's been given the ability to make the rules that are enforced against everyone in the country who wants to participate in horse racing.
Well, and Bill, the topic that I have come back to and basically waved the warning flag has been on the funding. I mean, that, I think if you accept and those that have accepted this concept as, a path forward for the industry, there's certainly room to respect that you know, that view of it. But the problem to me continues to be that, you know, the funding, no one ever wanted to address this. And there's been some lip service paid to not raising takeout. But it seems that the horse players, you know, they take it in the shorts over and over again. And, you know, it's not as if the owners, you know, the owners already are paying the freight. Trainers are being, you know, dinged from every angle possible. Taxation, the workman's comp, labor boards, payroll taxes. I mean, it's already an impossible financial burden that barely works. And yet, you know, here's this entity that is supposedly going to find a way to, you know, fund itself, but nobody's prepared to explain how.
Well, there is some explanation of how this is taking place, because there are contacts being made with horsemen's and women's group, racetracks, and racing commissions about how much they're spending now, for instance, for their testing programs. And I'm assuming that the nominating committee that would be involved at naming the authority, and ultimately the authority, would receive that information and have some background about what it cost in the past. We have no idea what it would cost for the testing through the private company in Colorado Springs. We have no idea what that would be. And all I can assume is that it will probably be more than what the cost is at present. And right now, at present, our racing commissions take care of most of that. Now, how does a private federal agency compel the state of Arkansas and the state of Florida to put part of their revenues into a private entity program to pay for the cost of testing? I have no idea how that could occur. I would assume it would require an act from the legislature in Florida or Arkansas before they could take public money in Arkansas and put it into a regulatory program for a private entity involving a particular industry. So those are the kind of questions that are out there that have no answers to them now, and we're not receiving any information from the Jockey Club, which has been the principal mover and shaker in terms of the adoption of this legislation. So there are questions like that are out that have no potential answer for us right now, and it will be up to the discretion of that authority once that authority's named, and they'll have the absolute right to tell us how much we're going to have to pay to be regulated. And what I think will happen, statistics already show that over 90% of owners lose money in the horse business. I've been in for 31 years, and in 31 years I've had 3 years I've made a profit. That's not a very good business model. And so you've really got to love what you're doing. So those are the kind of things that I think are out there that are so scary to us, and they're the consequence of Congress delegating its authority to a private entity.
Well, and Brian Kelsey with us from the Justice Law Center, and Judge Bill Walmsley from the Arkansas HBPA. Brian, what Bill just referenced, the states and their authorities and the revenue stream that they receive from racing, that's why I was curious about why there hadn't been state enjoining of this kind of a lawsuit, because it certainly, to me, I mean, they're at great risk, the 37 jurisdictions that that administer racing currently, and it is curious. I mean, why were they not, or how were they not engaged in this as well as this process, not the lawsuit process, but the process of the, you know, of the creation of HISA. How were they not, you know, part of the discussion?
Well, I do think it's just another example of how Congress, when it fails to actually debate laws, how it leads to making bad laws. And in this instance, it's not even quite clear how the authority is going to try to get its revenue. It says it uses two different paths. It says in one way, we're going to try to get it from the state racing commission. But, oh, by the way, if we don't get it that way, then we're just going to tax owners and
exactly.
trainers directly. And so, you know, again, just think about how outrageous this is, that you're telling a few members of one industry that they have the ability to impose a tax on the rest of the industry. I mean, that just never happened. And so that's why we think we have such a compelling case to tell the court here that this is just illegal, and you can't make laws this way.
Well, what is the timing, Brian? What will happen in the short term, and you know, how will this, the clock starts ticking, obviously, with the filing yesterday. What are the process from here?
Well, we're hoping to move very quickly because right now, all that we know that has happened is that the nominating commission has been named, and it's up to them to then name the permanent members of the authority. And so we're asking the court to stop that from taking place. And so it will be up to the judge, but we think that a hearing on that issue could take place very soon in the coming weeks.
Well, we will wait for that as the next step. And then once there's a hearing, how quickly is there either a pause, an injunction? How does that process unfold?
Well, the judge could issue an injunction very quickly thereafter. I mean, you know, even potentially at the conclusion of the hearing, but probably within a few days of that.
Well, we will wait and watch. And you know, certainly, Brian, I appreciate the opportunity to get this out and by way of an explanation for stakeholders and horse players and fans. Bill Walmsley, thanks very much. I hate that this is the first time I get a chance to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed being here. I don't particularly enjoy the subject, but the subject's there and we need to address it.
Brian Kelsey, the Justice Law Center, and Judge Bill Walmsley, the Arkansas HBPA, and essentially speaking for the national as well, as a lawsuit to challenge HISA. Clock starts ticking, and we'll continue to follow it, and we'll get some other viewpoints as well in coming days. Guys, thanks so much, and I'm sure we'll talk.
Really
thank
appreciate
you.
You having us on.
Bill Walmsley and Brian Kelsey. Let's take a break here. It's close enough to the top of the hour, and we'll come back and get into OBS. Going to talk to Tom Ventura and set the scene down there. They're about an hour away from starting the first two-year-old in training sale of the year. We'll check in with Aaron Wellman. Aaron will be glued to the computer all day. He's watching breezes. He's looking at pedigrees. He's in contact with his people on the sales grounds at OBS. And also Aaron and the Eclipse partners are basking in the afterglow of, like, I don't know, five wins in the last 2 weeks, including, I think, three stake wins. 10-year-old Ohio on Friday. Amazing. His third straight at Turf Paradise. Pretty cool. So Aaron Wellman's going to join us too. Andy Serling later. And I know we may have to wait until tomorrow to talk to Papo. I still have to do some form to win recapping from the weekend. And as I mentioned, as we talked about on Friday, the app now has the ability for anybody to use two free races a day. And so on some days, you know, we'll pick a race together maybe and you know, do it that way, and or you can, on your own, use the Form to Win app and have two free races. We want everybody to be comfortable with it and understand it. So, you know, before subscribing. So we're gonna handhold until you believe in it. Because it took me, I took me 90 days probably, December, January, into early February before I really started to, you know, reach for it and say, you know, let me see what Form to Win thinks of this race. It's really remarkable. Back after this, hour two at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents...